bases loaded and one out.
Oh my God.
Deep to right field. Way up there and way out of here. Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam.
First show here at MLB Playing Time. I want to thank you so much for joining us. I am your host, JP, that's at DapScout on Twitter, and I'm here with the guru himself, the lineup, King?
Savant.
Oh, King. I love it, yes. Like Mr. Him. Mike Curlin. Mike, thank you so much for letting me be on here with you.
Letting me? No. This is actually about you. I'm just the side dish cheer main entracer.
Oh, wow. Wow. You're I am the pickles to your whopper. Hey, look, you know what? Week one's in the books, and the best part about week one, which isn't even a full week, right? It's like four, rounds and on, is this person supposed to play? How are they looking in spring training? Look at that trend analysis. It's such an important thing. We look at it everywhere else with OBP and all these stats, and to be able to look at it with all these tools, Mike, you've created an amazing tool, and I from the fantasy community, thank you so much, and I can't wait to dive in more with this with you.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think it came from my own necessity of just wanting to understand things and gain that, because they always tell you, especially in the deeper the leagues, you're always attacking plate appearances, but the best way of doing that is to, a lot of it's just analyzing it yourself. There are some good weekly tools, like I think the Razzball has a weekly thing that they, shout out other stuff. There's good stuff. There's good coverage of it. They have projections. A lot of play, I think RotoWire has projections. FTN, I think. If you're a projection person, that's the way to go. I do a lot. This is all manual. Like, I have stuff that scrapes the information, but I break it down manually because I'm watching for it. I like that personal touch, and I think that personal touch still gives me an edge over some of these projection systems, because they might not catch, like, a Saturday Sunday trend that leads into the following week, so that right. That projection might not catch on to that, or just stuff like that. So I like to keep an eye on things, a lot of it manually, just, and it's become kind of an addiction of sorts that I decided to put on the internet. And that's what this show is going to be. The show's going to kind of take that and highlight that, you know what I mean? It's going to be part of the site. It's going to break down what some of the stuff I'm seeing, some stuff I'm tweeting, questions you might have, questions from the audience that we get as we go through the show. Yeah. We'll throw them up on the screen to answer them, of course. But yeah, a lot of it's just going to have that. It's going to be like a hyper focus of things. So kind of excited to see where it goes.
Awesome. Well, I have a couple of questions that I've received on DMs on Twitter. And again, you can DM both Mike and I. You see our names on the screen. My first one's kind of an easy one. What's your biggest surprise from week one here?
I guess I always get surprised at things of like, but almost like the lack of playing time for certain players. For instance, right. You have the Orioles not playing Couser, so why'd they keep him up? Same thing with Ortiz. Ortiz is sitting again against the righty. He's been a part-timer. I think he started against one of three against righties with a weak side platoon for the most part otherwise. So you have Ortiz getting some righty starts, all the lefty starts. You have Couser not starting a single game yet, unless he's in today's lineup, which could be possible, but it's one of those things where it takes some... It's going to take a day off or something for those guys.
You talk about Joey Ortiz, right?
Yes, Joey Ortiz for the Brewers. Couser for the Orioles. And right. There's one more I'm trying to think. Another young guy that was kept up for no... Oh, Graham Pauly, who... That's kind of a... So the last couple games he started, I believe. At least I know he started yesterday. I think he might have started the day before. He might be taking over as a starting third baseman for now. I think the goal there was to ease him into third base reps. But I think they want Pauly to be a DH, so they're waiting for Machado to get back in the field, which he's not quite there yet. But Pauly might be in a strong side platoon moving forward. That's something that's just now kind of coming together. We'll see. But at the end of the day, yeah, it was kind of the big thing was like, hey, we kept these young guys up, like Blaze Alexander. And Blaze Alexander is in a weak side platoon. They've just faced a ton of lefties, including another one today. Right. So our playing time might be masked by the fact that they're playing lefties. He hasn't started against a single righty. And yeah, so it's one of those things where all these young guys got kept up, upside and all that, and they're not playing them regularly or at all. So that's kind of my big surprise, is why keep up these guys that could be gaining meaningful reps in the minors to not play them with any type of regularity.
So as we do in the fantasy community, we like to take our victory laps after 4 days. Week one is in the books. What was one of your calls that you made preseason that has already come true in the first 4 days of the season?
Victory laps are tough. I think
it was tongue in cheek, because I know that you're incredibly you're incredibly against this whole process, but
I like to do it in jest. Like, I like to have fun like everyone else.
Of course, so, absolutely.
My victory laps come in the form of Austin Martin and Justin Foscue, just because I was so in on them for the deepest leagues, like early in draft season, just because it was like, hey, here's guys going outside the top 600 in ADP, and the leagues that we're drafting are 750 players if you draft champions like I do, 15 team draft and hold formats basically.
Right.
So those are victory laps, but for the worst reasons, right? injuries. So, and right. injuries to like guys that you drafted a lot sooner. So I'm happy to have Justin Foscue. I'm not happy that I lost Josh Young on my two biggest teams, like my two highest money, biggest fantasy. My only two shares are on those teams, and I'll be ranting about it all week. So when you say, oh, week one's in the books, I was grateful to get past week one, but week two started off equally horrible, if not worse. So, yeah, but that's kind of like my victory laps were kind of there. In terms of like calling a lineup, I guess being I was talking, and this goes back to talking to fans that follow the team closer than I ever could, but the Cubs were showing us a little bit of Ian Happ leading off like as early as like March 12th or something, like March 11th in spring. And I'm like, oh, Ian Happ leading off over Horner in the same lineups. And then Happ got injured, so we didn't get a large sample. But Cubs fans were like, yeah, you know, Council likes his OBP guys at the top. And I was like, you know what? You're right, because that makes sense with how he treated Yelich in Milwaukee and how he treated Frelick in Milwaukee. And it's kind of like how you have Ian Happ and Horner, kind of the same skill sets, right? Frelick being a hit tool guy, Horner being a hit tool guy, Happ being OBP, and so is Yelich. Seeing that kind of come to fruition and being early on that and kind of sticking to that in my projection on the site, because I do the line projections as well, you know, along with everything else on MLB playing time. So it's that was kind of cool, like little like, all right, cool, we nailed this one. But the one that was really shocking was the Reds. So that was like the anti, like the got this one completely wrong, because they didn't show any hints of this in spring. So, and that's actually something we'll talk about a little later.
Yeah, no problem. You know, we're going to talk about this a little later, but you already kind of teased it a little bit about, you know, the Rangers losing Young for 6 to 12 weeks. You have the injury pulled up at any chance that we can see the beautiness of everybody?
I do.
Right, so there you go.
There you go. So you'll see it restart. Here you go. So it's he was mid swing and just hit him right on the right on the wrist. It's unfortunate because so right before this, Adelise also got hit, right? So they had the back-to-back hitters, and Adelise got hit on the hand. We didn't hear anything about it. He was DHing, so he ran the bases. But how many times have we seen guys run the bases and then get out the next, you know, half inning or whatever? He didn't have to take the field. He was DHing, so we haven't heard anything about it. I haven't seen anything about it today. If he's in the lineup, great. But he got plunked right on the hand. And the 6 to 12 weeks, by the way, was a straight-up guess, because I went on Google and started looking stuff up, because I thought initially 6 to 8 weeks, but then if you look up fractured wrist stuff, like a typical average healing process for a wrist is like 6 to 12 weeks. I did read today that if he gets surgery, it actually could be on the shorter end, which is weird, because normally when you think surgery,
really?
It's longer. Yeah. Surgery can help make it be a quicker healing process, which that caught my, again, this was something I read on Twitter or X. So that's something.
It has to be true.
Well, it was somebody. It was actually somebody of no. No, you're right. Like normally we laugh like, oh, it has to be true because it's right. No, it's but it was somebody that wasn't like just somebody. It wasn't like a Twitter doctor or tried to be. It was something like that. It was somebody who's, I guess, familiar with the team, like a beat reporter that was given this information. Like, hey, so if he gets surgery, it might actually be a quicker return. But it's still very much a up in the air. And we're trying to figure that out. So, yeah, but I'm guessing 6 to 12 weeks. So my initial in my head is 6 to 8 weeks. So I'm thinking 2 months. And if it's more than 2 months, that's tough, because that's half the year.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking 6 to 8 weeks right now. And I'm holding on to them where I can for the most part until we get more clear, like a clear defined outline, like expectations here.
Are you worried at all about, you know, power being sapped at all? Because, I mean, the wrist has always been a graveyard injury in the sense of the season almost seems like it goes because you lose the power and kind of a lot of the other aspects as well with a wrist injury.
And that's what scares me, I guess, the most is that I feel like we see wrist injuries and then we see guys like Edmund who are recovering from offseason wrist surgery and he had a setback. So that's always a concern. But this is the same guy who got hit by a line drive in Josh Young last year that broke his hand. And then he returned and I think he still had the power and was kind of the same hitter. So I'm kind of banking on more of like, okay, he's broken a hand before and he was fine. So, but we'll see. You're right. There's a chance he comes back and he's just a shadow of himself the rest of the year. But I think that it depends on, again, league size matters on like in a 12 teamer, and I play NFBC, so there is no IL. I'd be more likely to drop him there because I think the replacement value not only is better, but you can also turn and burn and find stats easier. Whereas in a 15 teamer, like a main event or something, I want to give him a little more time. I want to give, regardless of format, I want to give him more time. I'm hoping by the end of the week, we have a clear outline. Cause if it's like, hey, he's missing 12 weeks minimum, or like then even in a 15 teamer with no IL, I think Young is going to be droppable because 3 months is a long time. And I understand that you can have him for 3 months to finish the year, but that's a very valuable spot. So there's a whole lot of other things that go into that thought process in the deepest of formats.
So one of the things I remember when we did our preseason show with you at Fantasy Six Pack was, shall I put it nicely, your rant about Henry Davis.
Oh, I was scared.
You're really concerned about the trending that, you know, he might not even make the team. He's playing now. Do you feel like he's going to stay up, or the Pirates going to be the Pirates and, you know, play with our emotions and be the anti-fun team again?
So I was scared that he wasn't going to make the team, but now that he made the team, I have a lot of shares too. So I was always in on him. It was the sketchiness of the comments from the GM, I believe it was the GM, or maybe it was one of the coaches. Somebody important was commenting about how, like, basically not, like, they were so wishy-washy and non-committal, and I hated that. And then you start, again, it goes back to listening to the fan base, and the fan base is like, look what they're doing. And at one point, before the final few games of spring, when I came on and ranted, he wasn't the one starting with the regulars for a few days, for like two or three games in a row. It was all the backups, the crappy backups that nobody wants. So I was like, this would be really Pirates fashion. But then ever since coming up, he's played, I think, 4 or 5, started at catcher 4 or 5.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure even if What's-His-Face comes back, he's not. I think he already earned enough to get that lion's share. So even if it's 3 out of 5 or 4 out of 6, I think Henry Davis can hold on to that role as long as he keeps hitting. They'll put up with it, because people don't realize Grandal was brought in for his defense, is what we all think or say. But he took such a huge step backwards defensively last year, and he's 35, and now we're talking about plantar fasciitis. Who knows how that goes the rest of the year? I think Davis is going to be one of the better bargains of draft season once he gets that catcher eligibility. And I've been starting him in the outfield, because a lot of places he's not eligible as catcher, right? So right. I've been starting him in the outfield lately, because he's been hitting well enough, and some leagues don't have better options. So, but yeah, it's those things where
For those people watching, are you starting him in a three outfield league, a 4 outfield league? We're 5?
Has to be 5. He's not good enough for a 3. More of a 5, because he is playing, like I say, he's playing 2 out of 3 here and there. And they're in a deeper, and now you might have better options with more playing time. By all means, do it. But like, there's spots where I have no choice. And there's spots where it's like, how much better am I getting out of this, like Lawrence Butler right now? Like, again, this is the deepest formats. How much better is Lawrence Butler right now? Right. Than Henry Davis. Henry Davis is swinging better. They're seeing lefties. He hits lefties better, and he's playing plenty. So it's like, that's like those fringe decisions where I'm like, oh, look at this guy's matchups versus this guy's. And that's where, but yeah, anything shallower than 15, you can't start him until he gets his catch eligibility, probably, because he's not going to play enough compared to pretty much anybody else that you probably have option, that you have his option.
Right. All right. So I always like to touch on Twitter controversies that we run into. And by that, I mean the fantasy baseball community has a tendency to just get in a tizzy over things. This week, or in the last 2 hours or 2 days, we seem to have a lot of fighting over Siri Ruiz and Victor Scott II. There is the camp that says Victor Scott II is infinitely better. And as you see me joke a lot of times, we have a Hall of Fame tracker for Victor Scott II. I love him as a, you know, speed play, but I'm not going to say one way or another if he's better than Ruiz, especially with the light hitting he's done so far. But with Ruiz going to the minors for multitude of reasons, whether or not they're official or not, way in here is, you know, Scott a safe bet to be in that lineup much longer if he keeps the hitting playing time that he's, I mean, the hitting trends that he's been showing. I mean, when he gets on base, he's amazing, but getting on base is a problem. And how do you feel about him or Ruiz better play in kind of those outfield spots?
So I do like Scott better. I think Scott is a better real life player. I think the glove plays up. I think Scott can be a better hitter. Those aren't really the arguments. It's a fantasy skill set thing. And that was the whole comp. I think people overestimate the comp for being more than just like, because when I look at Victor Scott, I look at Hestry Ruiz, because it's a very similar, like, you're getting speed first, limited power impact, and batting at the bottom of the order, limited counting stats. Again, we're hoping for better batting average, but when you're striking out at 35% clip to start, now again, 5 games, small sample, just came off a series with the Dodgers, not exactly a fair way to, you know, get a good idea of what this player is, but still, I think Scott's a better player. With that being said, I think that's real life. In fantasy, I don't see much difference in Ruiz and Scott other than playing time, obviously, now. Right. So that's, I think it's a fair comp. I think it's also a lazy comp. As someone who's made that comp, it's a lazy comp, but people overblow that comp. Like, again, it goes back to people like, well, you're saying he's not, like, I'm not saying he's not better. I think for fantasy, though, when you look at fantasy, take away, you have to look at just what they bring to the table. And right now you're getting one category, and that's if he can get on base. You assume, but even at best, you're getting 2 categories, one being an elite category, but Scott is still a rabbit. Like, that, like, that's stuff that you usually don't build around. Like, you know, he's a negative producer in runs, RBIs, and home runs. That's just the fact of the matter. But he'll be a plus in two at best categories. And that's my concern. And that's where the comp comes in for me. But in terms of being an actual better player, I think Scott takes that without much argument. And, but he hasn't shown it yet, but that's not fair. It's, you don't judge a guy off five games. That's just dumb.
I will say this, and this is my own take because, yes, I'm an A's fan, so I know Jorge Mateo very well as he was coming through the A's system. I feel Victor Scott II is a Stewie, is Jorge Mateo in a lot of ways where, you know, we're looking at 2022 Baltimore maybe as kind of his ceiling, or maybe the Padres, you know, with 293 OBP and maybe, you know, 50 or more stolen bases. Now, I think Victor Scott could steal a lot more bases than that because he has a lot better rules, but it's going to be interesting. And let me put it this way. I'm excited when he gets on base. That's something like, let's throw out the fantasy perspective for a second. When Victor Scott gets on base and Ruiz gets on base, that is fun to watch because, you know, everybody knows they're stealing. So just what are they going to do? And I do enjoy that part a lot. So definitely interesting piece there. Now, from leaving from one debate to just an internal one, and for one that for people that are kind of looking at that filling, you know, injuries and various things, right? The Blue Jays last year, they were driving me nuts with Biggio and Schneider, and Schneider was on that hot streak when he first got called up, and then Biggio kept, like, you know, then they decided to, like, just bench Schneider for like 5 or 6 games every week. It was just ridiculous to me. Now it seems like Biggio, Schneider, and IKF are constantly, not all three of them can ever be in the lineup. Are the Blue Jays ever going to be fantasy friendly when it comes to kind of those people outside of the Vlads and, you know, the other people, you know, the Kiermaiers and things like that? Or are we ever going to have a point where we feel, you know, safe on that infield to, you know, play somebody 5 or 7 games a week?
So the way it's been working so far, Kiermaier every day in the outfield, which is boring, but you know it's there pretty much. Right. And he'll sit, he'll get his rest days because he just can't stay healthy usually himself. But when he's healthy, he's out there. IKF has been the everyday third baseman, as gross as that is. And you've had Biggio on a strong side platoon, which was kind of always the projection. So Bichette's been dealing with a neck injury, right? Or a neck issue with, like, stiffness. I don't know if there's more to it than that right now. But with that being said, they had a start yesterday against a righty, and Schneider still didn't get in. They actually had Ernie Clement play shortstop. I thought maybe they could move IKF over to shortstop because he's played there before, right? Opening second base, moving Biggio to third, opening second base for Schneider, but they didn't do that. They still kept Schneider out against the righty yesterday with Bichette out of lineup. So I don't even think Schneider's the next man up right now. I think Schneider is kind of buried as, like, depth to the depth, like, which is ridiculous because we all thought he had a shot. Like, I knew I was scared of his playing time, but I wasn't this scared. But right. It looks like, so if all push comes to shove, at least what they showed us in one game, Clement might be the favorite to get playing time, but over Schneider, with Biggio remaining in that strong side platoon, IKF an everyday starter for some reason. I guess the glove plays. And I mean, they just got no hit, so maybe they'll change something up today, but by a 30-year-old first-time starting player. But anyway, who knows? Blue Jays have made interesting decisions all offseason, so that's one of them that's just, like, keeping an eye on it. But yeah, Schneider's just, he's not getting no love from his own team, so it's hard for us to give him any love and think that better is going to come from it, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just one of those things I used to make fun of, like, oh, you know, move Biggio somewhere to Schneider. Now you're telling me Schneider's 2-3 men away from, you know, the lineup. That that's head scratching. Yes, IKF, as we know with the Yankees, can play everywhere, great, but that is boring, you know, fantasy production. Real world production, fine ish but not, you know, everything,
at least offensively. Yeah. His glove is the strength, and I guess they're hoping to get by on the offense from the others, because that bat is not going to do much.
Well, if one game samples anything, they are not going to get by with the bat from the others. So yeah, that's going to be interesting. And all right, so the Reds were the opposite problem, where we didn't know where all these superstars were going to play, and then one injury happened, and we're like, oh, see, look, you know, that's why they had so much depth, and then another one, and then another one, and then it felt like somebody was just picking on them. You know, everybody's getting injured there. What have you seen kind of with their lineups this past week? Against lefties, against righties, that do we see any trends, surprises there that you want to call out?
Well, I guess we should probably pull this up. I guess I forgot we're talking about this. So this is obviously, so for those watching, the MLBPlayingTime.com playing time dashboard updates every day, every morning. So we don't have today's lineups, but, like, you can sort by team. It'll tell you who's hitting where in the lineup. You can sort by lefties versus righties. You can include spring training, which we're not, obviously. So right now you pull up the Reds. It's going to show you game started and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 all the way through 9 on the top, and it'll show you how many starts in those spots. You can alter the game date range too, so it doesn't matter if you change it to the first day of the week, of the year. It doesn't, I mean, when was the first day of the year? I don't even remember. March 23rd or something.
Well, it doesn't matter if you put go to January yeah. 1st, right? Yeah. Like,
as long as you don't include spring, you'll get the start of the season is kind of the point. Right. Right. But yeah, so like just looking at it, if you want to look at righties, we'll do that real quick, and you can see it'll remove anyone who hasn't started against a righty. But so against righties, you have CES batting third, Benson batting second, and India leading off. India leading off wasn't the surprise. It was CES right into the three spot, as well as Benson right into the two spot against righties. And I know they were hitting Benson towards the top at the end of spring, but yeah. I thought that was more so getting him reps because we didn't really see a full lineup. And I don't think we ever saw anything but Ellie batting second all spring, regardless lefty or righty. So I always thought he was going to bat second against righties and move down against lefties because Ellie is known to struggle against lefties, but Ellie has bat sixth pretty much exclusively. So wow. If we go back and look at all of them, you'll see that Ellie has been... where is he at? He's right here. Yeah, all four games started against lefties, two against lefties, two against righties, fourth. You have Spencer Steer batting second against lefties and seventh against righties. So you know there's some playing time, like there's play appearance gap there. Like he's going to get a lot less play appearances when he faces a week full of lefties, against righties for Steer. So you just have to know those types of trends. But Candyman batting fourth, CES exclusively batting third. Those were, again, the big surprise was CES. Like, hey, you're batting third. Even though all spring we didn't put you there, pretty much. We're going to have you there from day one. So the Reds just kind of threw us for a loop. And then the platoon here right now is Nick Martini and Stuart Fairchild. Those two are platooning as well. And then you're having also Tyler Stevenson not hitting against lefties, which is weird. But he's also just spending time catching. But Santiago Espinal is getting in there with Jake Fraley sitting against lefties. So you have Fairchild and Espinal starting versus lefties, Fraley and... Martini starting against righties, and that's okay. Your platoon partners for the most part, with everyone else playing pretty much every day.
Is there anything else that people need to be aware of with this tool that you're showing us right now that can help them kind of say, okay, I see these two guys have kind of split whatever the two and three hole. Is there anything else that can kind of help them? Is there anything that they need that should be clicking? Any other piece of this tool that they need to be aware of?
Oh, I mean, you can just play around with it. You can get trip if you want to see players, you can go to team by team, but you can go to the little splits tab and it'll show you. It'll kind of break it down in a clearer way. You can see game start. You can see one player and their total game started lefty or righty. You have to actually alter the dates for those though, because it is showing spring training stats, but it's going to give you your total game started versus lefties, total game started versus righties, or vice versa, righties, lefties. And it's going to show you where in lineup they hit over. And again, you could change the dates on that. So if you change the dates, make it after spring training, you'll get the regular season values. And as the season goes on, 2 to 3 weeks. And the thing is, though, is when you use this tool, you have to understand, like, this is where I kind of wish I need to work on something that helps you do this, because sometimes lineups will be weird. You're like, huh, this guy's been leading off for like 3 straight games. Well, it's because the leadoff hitter is injured. He's day to day or he's out. So you have to understand the reasoning behind it. Sure. And that's where I usually follow that up with an article or something. But just the actual information of knowing who bats where and when over set dates. And this one's a little more... The other was a player trend tracker. So it gives you a kind of like a set. You can, again, you can do game. You can do a set of a date range again, and you get to look up the team or player, and it shows you this one's a little more tough to read, but it shows the date and it's kind of like, this one's actually almost redundant. I got to have this fixed up. I can almost get rid of that one, but this is one I like to play with.
As you can tell, Mike is very, very humble here. I mean, this is a tool that has been amazing for the last couple of weeks.
It's been fun to toy with.
He's trying to make it as perfect as possible. And I think the notes piece would be great, like a little exclamation mark or something next to the player to let them know what's going on there. But if you use this tool and then even search for the date range on Twitter, Mike would probably make a note. Mike always has Mike notes or Curlin notes on Twitter as well. And probably correlates to a lot of this stuff. But, you know, going back real quick to the Reds, you know, my biggest thing is, you know, okay, so these guys are out. Fine. I try to start as many Reds as possible at home. Because that's better than Colorado as a hitter's park. Mm. Will Benson seems to be a guy whose underlying stats are, you know, showing a lot more than his actual stats. Where's he playing right now? And are the Reds organization buying into that as well? Because, I mean, you know, he was a fantasy darling there last year when he finally got, you know, traded, and he finally kind of was picking up some playing time. And then he really wasn't showing an uptick. Again, underlying stats looked great. But now, you know, does it look like the Reds organization has bought in?
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to think so. The fact that they said, you know what, not only are you playing every day, because now he's not platooning, which was one of the big like concerns with back when they had all the all the headache there.
Right.
The big concern was Benson, Fraley, those guys platooning. Well, Bailey, I combined them. Benson, okay. He's batting second against righties, which again, big boost. And lefties, he bats ninth, which is whatever, but at least he's playing. But he's hitting the ball hard. He's barreling it well early on. We're talking such a small sample, it doesn't really matter. The strikeouts are a concern. There is some swing and miss in his game. So you know the batting average will be a problem. I know right now the batting average is good, but that's because Benson has a 571 BABIP. Sorry to break it to you. Even with that ballpark, 571 is not happening. No. But this is a guy who did have a 391 BABIP last year over 108 games. So not saying he'll even repeat that BABIP, but plus speed and just hits the ball as hard as he does. BABIPs can run higher for guys like that. And Benson can run a higher BABIP, but I would expect closer to like 275 last year was a gift. I think he's closer to 240, 250 of a hitter realistically, but he already has a home run and his team is running wild. He already has a stolen base. I think Benson's going to run as much as he wants. I think the whole team's going to run. So Benson's a guy that you should be very in on. This is a guy that you would want pretty much even in three outfield leagues, 12 teamers, anything shallower than that gets a little iffy just because, I don't know. I can't imagine him not being useful. I don't play in those shallow leagues, so I can't speak to what's available, but it's hard for me to imagine that he isn't better than what you have on your team somewhere on the bench or otherwise. That's Will
Benson. Mike Curlin only plays in 85 player leagues. No, I'm kidding.
Something that feels like that right now when I'm over here, like excited to be getting JJ Bleda on my team. Like who's excited to be excited about that? But I am.
Well, let's talk about Bleda, who was, a top former 50 top prospect there for a while. And then,
prospect. We can't develop hitting for nothing over here though.
With the Marlins. And then he goes to Cavernous O.co Coliseum. Who knows where he plays next year? I'm assuming they're going to use the minor league. I think they're talking about using the minor league Coliseum, stadium before they move to where the Tropicana used to be. So friends in low places, can you give me some players that have a lot of value in these bad teams that nobody wants to watch?
So it goes. This is why Bleda and Lawrence Butler kind of. I know Butler bats the bottom of the order, but what you'll notice here is five games started. They've only played five games. Butler's an everyday player. Same with Bleda. Bleda having more relevance because he's batting second and third and sixth once. But like against lefties, he moves down, but he bats second or third almost every day, especially against righties. So Bleda is gonna play as much. Bleda and Butler have fantasy viability. They're playing on a team that they should just. Obviously, it looks like they're just gonna let them go, which is great. They both have like power and speed skill sets. Butler, I think, a little more flashy with the tools. Bleda might have a little more of a floor. And I know Bleda is kind of hitting better right now, but hasn't really done anything other than that. Like he hasn't, there's no stolen bases, no home runs. So there's nothing there that you really, the stuff that you want fantasy purposes haven't been there yet. But I think last year he hit 10 home runs, stole five bases in 82 games. So you think he can give you 15, 10 or something. Nothing flashy, but usable. Lawrence, I think, has a little more flash potential, but I think he also has more swing and miss to his game. And so, but just know that those are kind of like guys on, like obviously JD Davis, I think has more value. Ryan Noda, he's a streamer because he's a power boom or bust guy. You play him against righties only because he sits against lefties, as you can see if you're watching. So it's one of those things where you got to know the team and the team dynamics, but those two are exciting just because they're playing every day and they're just kind of like, I don't know, out there in like pretty much the deepest formats, which is what makes them fun. What other teams like the Pirates are pain.
Hold on. Before you jump ahead, Ryan Noda is a guy that you sounded the alarm on during the offseason because, a lot of people were looking at Noda and along with Zeloff as kind of these, cheap power guys. Now, obviously, that's two different worlds, really apples and oranges. I'm not going to put Zeloff and Noda together, but you were sounding the alarm on Noda. Do you feel like this is what we should expect from him in the sense of, 200 batting average? Again, I know it's only a couple of the games. Or do you think there's some improvement here? Or do you think there's actually a floor below this?
I don't know how much lower the floor can get. I think what we saw is what we got from him last year. Noda's just a guy that 16 home runs and 229. I think he's a poor man's Max Muncy, which is bad. You don't want to be a poor man's Max Muncy. That's why it's like, if you need,
you don't power, want to be a rich man. You don't want to be a rich man, Max Muncy.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. So it's like, if you need power in those 15 teamers, he's a CI type. There's other guys like more, but he's really just a streamer. Like if the A's are playing seven righties, he'll play at least six of them type of thing. So it's a volume approach and you're targeting home runs for Noda. So that's where Noda comes in. And that's the only way I would view him. Nothing more, nothing less.
All right. Sorry. You're going to the Pirates. My apologies.
No, don't be. I'm fine to talk about your A's
nope,
all day.
No, unacceptable. Nobody wants to listen to that. It's okay, guys. I get it.
I mean, I would, because I like the A's. I think they're fun. What the heck happened to my thing? Anyway.
Top of that list, though, Connor Joe. Look, can I just say, Connor Joe, if you're in best ball, Connor Joe is the sneakiest best ball player. As long as you're in a league where you don't have to worry about if he's in the lineup or not, obviously he's 5 for 5 now, but Colorado, Pittsburgh, wherever, Connor Joe is just the best ball player. I just loved it. Like, oh, Connor Joe did what? So yeah. Sorry about that, but go ahead. Yeah.
He's fun, but it's also, so this is weird. They've played only 5 lefties. So that's why Connor Joe's played so much, because we'll see if he's in the lineup today against a righty. And he might be. I don't think Connor Joe's ever in a strict platoon. He's always in and out. Like, but he might be more of a part-timer against righties, which is what I anticipate for Connor Joe. But lefties, he leads off. So that's why he's let off 5 in a row. But like guys like Telez have only played 2 games. Sawinski, only 2 games. Because these are guys that don't play a lot against lefties. So these are 2 guys like this week. I think they just played a lefty yesterday, and I think it's 5 straight righties the rest of the week. Mm. You should expect to see a lot of Sawinski and a lot of Telez now, and less Connor Joe. And probably less, Olivares, probably less of him. And that's probably the main 2 guys I would say you'd see less of in response. So
well, that's interesting, right there, the Sawinski, because you had somebody ask on Twitter, should they drop Sawinski for, I can't remember which, one of the other Pirates players already, because he's only played 1 game and they're looking at it because they thought that, you know, maybe he stinks. And it's not that at all. It's because of what you just said. They were overloaded on lefties. They're facing lefties. So it's absolutely not the time to jump ship on a Sawinski type or something like that because of one game that they've played.
And it just goes back to understanding that there's context behind these things. And I understand no one's as much of a degenerate with this stuff as I am, right? There's very few people. I know I've shouted him out 1,000 times about it. Like Rob DiPietro covers this stuff really well.
Right.
And he's kind of one of the only guys I know that covers it as in depth as I do, as frequently as I do too. Right. So it's like he's one of the, and which is a good thing. Like you want people, like this is a niche that is growing in popularity, almost like closers, because there's so much turnover. Well, lineups have more turnover than ever, and it's hard to keep up with everything. So unless you're like me, where this is what I care about because I'm weird like that, I understand not realizing, hey, they played 5 straight lefties. It's not something that a lot of people are going to talk about, especially with the Pirates, right? So for the average fantasy player. So just understand sometimes, like when you're wondering why is your favorite player or why is this guy not playing much, just understand teams platoon a lot and they might have had a run of lefties or righties. You could double check it. The tool that's what this tool helps with too, because you can just come on the site and the tool is there for like you to double check it. Like, oh, he's actually sat against 2 out of 3 last 3 righties. So he's just not playing. That's when you drop him. You know what I mean? But Swinsky's a guy, I still think the power is legit. He's like stupid. Like his strikeouts are a concern, but it's funny because it's like very Nolan Jones-esque, as in there's some swing and miss, but it's mostly just overly passive. He doesn't swing enough. So that's where Sawinski strikes out from. So yeah, at the end of the day, Sawinski, I'm not really too worried about. Michael A. Taylor is a fun stream. He plays every day. So regardless of if you're right, he should play every day because defensive purposes. So if you're in a deep league and you have 5th outfielder just for plate appearances, he's batting like 8th or 9th most days, I believe. 8th. 8th or 9th, yeah, he's both. So Taylor's a guy that if you just want to target play appearances, that's your. I feel like every year it's kind of like Michael A. Taylor. Hey, he's playing. Oh, this week he hit 3 home runs, stole 2 bases. The next 3 weeks he's done nothing. And I guess which week you didn't start him? Week
right, he did.
That's Michael A. Taylor. That's my experience with Michael A. Taylor. Yep, I chase it. I always chase it, never get it.
Oh, Michael. Oh, yes. The joys of Michael A. Taylor. What about, you know, so we've covered, you know, those, the Pirates, we've covered, the A's. How about we go to the Twins next?
So we lost Royce Lewis, which I'll throw that video up here for those who have not seen it somehow. He was simply running the bases. And, as you can see on the screen, if you're watching, Royce Lewis rounds second, takes like a funky step on the base or like mid base. And then I think he hurt himself even worse trying to push through it right there as he got into third base. So Lewis is out for at least a month. I mean, we're talking probably almost, you're hoping for the All-Star break at this point, I think, which is unfortunate. And in the meantime, the last 2 days, we've seen Willie Castro, kind of like everyone's like favorite sleeper before they made some signings, right? So Willie Castro's played 2 straight games. He started today as well, which won't reflect on the site necessarily because it updates every morning, but still 2 straight games at third base as a starter for the Twins. So Willie Castro is kind of the next man up there. And then I'm still wondering, like, everyone thought, like, oh, well, now against lefties, this Edward Julien should get some more playing time. But I don't know if that's the case. They went out and brought up Austin Martin. Now, Martin's nothing special, but he is a righty bat, and he's a utility player so that can play all over the place. And they showed opening day, they sat Julien against a lefty. So this team isn't afraid to sit Julien. And that should tell you something right there. You know, like that should already give you like oh, no. Oh, no. Like, if they're willing to sit him day one, why suddenly, like, I know Royce Lewis being out opens up a spot for him against lefties, but maybe it gives him more starts. I just don't think he's suddenly going to be an everyday player. So I think I still project Julien to be more of a part-time player against lefties, even with Royce out, which is unfortunate because obviously Julien, you're going to start him most weeks anyway, because he, as long as they have enough righties. But if it's one of those weeks, like I think the Tigers have a three lefty, three righty split, how you can't really start Julien with confidence that week because he might start 4 out of 6. And that's not what you need out of a player. Even though he can be really good in those 3 or 4 games, it's scary. So Julian's a guy that I'm still, we have to see. We don't have a large enough sample yet against lefties. Sooner than later, we'll get it.
What about Wallner and Kirilloff? I mean, Kirilloff, we just are waiting for the injury, sadly. But, you know, Wallner was kind of a big fantasy waiver wire pickup in this short week. So are you looking at where he's being utilized at all?
So Wallner's a strong side platoon guy, which is great. Like, he's been batting fifth, and I think he is batting, the lineup came out today, I think they're already starting to play. He's batting sixth today. So yeah, either way, he plays every day against righties. So Wallner's a strong side platoon bat, and that's the thing about Wallner. Just know that he's a strong side platoon bat. Kirilloff's up to this two spot, which is where he's been. I didn't realize he was batting second because I don't care. Kirilloff just, he's so mediocre, man. It's aggravating because I used to be a real big Alex Kirilloff guy. And then the wrists after wrists.
He gets on those heaters, those Kirilloff heaters. I mean, then he gets injured, but he gets on those heaters and it just makes you want to believe. Then I'm back in again. And then he gets injured.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of, I'm just not in the mood to chase it. Oh no, they don't play. They play at 4 o'clock. I was thinking 2 o'clock. Anyway, my time, Eastern. So it'll be after this podcast shows. But anyway, either way. So yeah, Kirilloff's another strong side platoon guy. So if you're chasing play appearances, he'll get you those there, but it could be empty for now. We haven't really seen the power play up. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, there's just a lot of platoons here. The weak side guys, Kyle Farmer and Margot, those are two weak side guys. Kepler's just been day to day. He usually starts against righties and will sit against lefties sometimes.
Sure,
but Kepler's just day to day dealing with something, a hip or something. Oh no, he's in today. He's back. Okay, so he was out for a couple games, but he's back today. So he's back today batting fourth against a righty. He started the one game he started was against lefty, and it shows you that he still batted sixth. Okay. So yeah, Kepler's still pretty much Kepler always gets like the first crack at it. And then if he fails, they'll start shifting in Julien. If Julien fails, they'll shift in Wallner. It's what they do. They kind of play around. Rocco Baldelli lets the hot hand run over there in Minnesota. So this is one of those lineups that there's a lot of frequent changeover. But if you know the basics of like who plays against lefties and who plays against righties, from there you can just like make your decisions. But
real quick, any concerns from you with Ober?
No. No,
you don't want you're not going to just drop them now after one innings pitch.
We should. It was a weird inning. But yeah, no, I just no, right? Like, I just can't. I've actually had questions about it. I know
that's why I'm bringing it up, because I'm looking at your Twitter feed and I saw the questions about Over already.
I wrote back literally no. for one of them, because I was just like, because I don't want to elaborate, because I've been asked so many times, and I don't mean to be rude. It's just one of those things where it's like, no, one start, it would have to be a fringe guy, not a guy I'm taking as my SP3 or 4, depending on your 5 in some leagues. Yeah, it's going to take a lot for him to fix what he did to you, but I think he's far from the pitcher we saw that day. It's just his skills. He has a long track record of showing you otherwise. No reason to think that he's broken because of one start. We still have another, 6 months of baseball, 5.5 months of baseball. Yeah. Give him a chance. Now, if he does this for the whole month of April, yeah,
we'll bring him up again on the show,
which is fine.
Yeah. All right. So let's go from the Twins to somebody who the Twins, I think, would probably want to still be on the team. Nick Gordon over there on a new cap, new name with the Marlins, brother to D Strange Gordon. Do you think, first off, is not a bad start to season, 1 home run, 3 RBIs, but, batting 200, both OBP and average. Is this somebody that you're going to be trying to target with all these injuries, or where are you at with how Nick Gordon's being utilized?
So I like the playing time. It's a strong side platoon. So that means, again, for those listening, it's pretty much just understand that he's going to play against righties, period, which is great. But if they have a week, like I think this week, Marlins actually have one of those weird lineups of like, or they have like two or three lefties they're facing. So it's hard to get a guy like that in there knowing he's limited. On top of being limited for Gordon, he's also batting eighth in that lineup. So he's batting at the bottom end of that lineup. And he's already, and so the less plate appearances as it is on top of platooning, so less plate appearances. So it's more of a fifth outfielder in your 15 teamers or deeper. But we know there's some power and speed there. We've seen, not necessarily a lot of power, but we know there's like he's shown some pop in the past. He's definitely shown speed in the past. So right. I'd like to think that Nick Gordon, well, he'll have weeks where he's viable, but he's not somebody I'm looking at like, oh, he's going to fix my problems. But I will target him where I lost players if I need to go chase some steals or just chase some plate appearances.
Okay. Well, Mike, real quick, another trivia time with Nick Gordon. Unless hopefully you don't have his stats up because that'd be cheating. Oh, man.
I closed the page, though.
Okay, good. All right. There we go. All right. How many stolen bases over and under has Nick Gordon had over the last three seasons? Over under 15.
Oh, I see. That's not fair. I did just see that. And I know it's like right there. I think it's like 16.
It's 16. That blew my mind. I couldn't believe. And then on top of that, he's gotten caught stealing five of those, you know, for five times. So in 21 chances, he's got caught stealing five times. That's,
to be fair, these are before the rules, though. He missed all of last year. It's like a broken leg or whatever.
Well, he played 34 games. I mean, come on. That's almost the entire season. That's longer than most people are waiting right now to cut people this week one. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, you're right. It is longer. But no, it's one of those things where it's yeah, I just think he's one of those guys that's fast enough to take advantage of the rules. Now, will they let him in Miami? I don't know.
Right.
But he hasn't yet. Although, like you mentioned, 200 OBP. Has he really had a chance to steal bases? Barely. But with that said, like I said, he's the ceiling's not really there. We just know there's a little upside because there's a reason why we were chasing it last year before he got injured. Right. He was kind of like a sleeper in deeper formats last year. We all liked him. Like I was in on him last year. Before, and then that really, really bad injury. I think it was a broken leg or something crazy like that. It was a really bad injury. And never returned, barely returned. And when he returned, he barely played. He was two games a week type of guy.
Yep. Well, and here's the thing, right? Like, I mean, when you look at a speedster at the bottom of the lineup, you typically want to see if they have a, you know, base clogger in front of them. You know, he has Tim Anderson there in the seven spot. I don't know if they were playing, if that's seven with him in the same lineup. And then he had Avisel Garcia. Neither one. I mean, Tim Anderson's not slow. Garcia's not slow either. So seeing those two at least makes me a little bit more excited about if he gets on base, he can still do damage and doesn't have to worry about, you know, somebody like, I don't know, they're a De La Cruz or somebody slow in front of
Berger.
Him.
So
Berger, there you go. There you go.
Josh Bell and Berger are your slow guys.
There you go. No, I was trying to read as quickly as possible there. But yeah, so that at least gives me some hope that he could definitely use that speed as a weapon. Anything else that we should kind of note on here in the Marlins lineup?
They suck. Avisel Garcia is awful, and he's always been awful since we've gotten him in Miami. And I say we because I'm a Marlins fan. But yeah, he's a weak side platoon guy. He hit a home run the other day, but he is god awful. He's a waste of space on that team. And I wish they would cut him, but they won't because there's the fact that they. But I am grateful that they said, you know what, you suck. I don't care if we're paying you like $15 million. You're a part time player at best. And so, but yeah. Anybody who might have hope for him, nobody really seems to have hope for him. But, you know, he has that weird name recognition. I wouldn't get overly excited if I see his name pop up on a depth. Like, oh, look, he hit a home run today. Let me go pick him up. I wouldn't bother, at least right now. He's shown no real reason to be excited about him. That's Avisel Garcia I'm talking about.
You know, Oh, sorry. Yes. Avisel Garcia.
For people who are not watching.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay. All right. Got it. Any other kind of teams that people aren't watching other than home, people that are fans of those teams, any other players we should be targeting on other teams?
No, I think we covered most of the stuff I want to talk about. I know the Mets get ready, like DJ Stewart, he's already a fringe guy for most, even for the deepest of the leagues. But he's probably going to be out of, he's probably going to be sent down when Martinez comes up. Brett Beatty is a strong side platoon partner for the Mets. Obviously we have to see what happens in Texas, but my guess is Ezekiel Duran's going to take the playing time there. For Young. Okay. And other than that, no, I think it's we covered most of it.
Okay. So let's go back to the Texas real quick. You know, the talk on both sides with Evan Carter. So Evan Carter was, you know, once Langford looked like he was going to make the lineup, he was shooting up the ranks. But right there was Evan Carter as well, rightfully so. But the talk was, can he hit lefties? And Evan Carter owned it, right? He said, look, I haven't been hitting lefties, but I need to get, you know, more experience with lefties. Has he? I think he has one walk against lefties this year with, you know, no hits whatsoever. Is Evan Carter in any danger of just being a strict, you know, larger side platoon? Do you think there's any chance that that happens sooner rather than later? Or do you think that Rangers are going to give him a run for because of what he did for the World Series team last year?
I think Evan Carter is going to get some run. Now, I don't think he's going to find much success against lefties. That's just because I'm a pessimistic person, I guess. But I do have him in very important leagues. So I did buy into the fact that I don't care if he loses some playing time against lefties. I don't think he's going to be a weak side platoon partner. I don't think he's going to be in a platoon, like a strict one. I think if he loses playing time, it'll be like he'll get 1 or 2 days off here and there against lefties. Like, he's not going to sit against every single lefty.
Right.
But tougher lefties, I expect him to. But he bats eighth against them. He's started against both of them so far, and he bats third against righties. And now with Josh Jung going down, that's just more wiggle room for him to have. Not that Jung played the outfield, but just one of those things where they're going to want to keep their best bats in the lineup as often as possible to help make up for that offensive hit. But I do think that I think M. Carter is a risk to lose playing time eventually. I don't think he's ever going to be a strict platoon guy. But last year, they called him up. And granted, it was down the stretch, but Carter came up and never started against a single lefty. In the playoffs, didn't start against a single lefty. His first lefty he started against at the major league level was this year after getting called up last year. So I was a little concerned. But and the thing is you mentioned he has no hits, but he's only struck out 5.6%. So we'll call it 5.5%.
Yep.
Of the time, and he's walked 33% of his play his at bats. So he's seeing the ball very well. He's just not he's walking a ton, and he still has 5 runs for a guy who has no hits. It's impressive. So I think that spot at the top of the lineup is definitely safe. And when he does swing, we're talking an elite zone contact. I mean, again, small sample, but 93%. Anything over 90% is pretty much elite. 93% zone contact for Evan Carter so far. Swing strike rate under 10%. League average usually around 11 or 12, so better than league average swing. And the guy doesn't chase. Less than 20% O-swing. For reference, league average is usually around 30 to 32%. So, it's an elite plate approach for Evan Carter. I think he stole base yesterday. A fun fact is, if you include the playoffs, since he's come up, Evan Carter is 7-for-7 for stolen bases at the major league level. So I think he's taking advantage of those rules rather well. And it's I wonder if they're going to give him a green light because his on-base ability has been there. He's just not hitting yet, but the hits are going to come because he makes too much contact for them not to. The power might be a little less than desirable at the end of the day, but I think he'll be able to steal bases, score a ton of runs, and be a productive part of this lineup once he gets hitting. But the fact that he's seen the ball this well gives me a lot of optimism for him to get going sooner than later.
All right. So going from one guy who the rumors were, you know, we weren't sure where he was at, and again, two camps, to somebody who might have been a platoon. We're worried because how the team was. So the Red Sox had Rafaela make the team. Zidane Rafaela, who is one of their top prospects and, you know, kind of glove first there. But people were worried about Duran. I mean, Duran was getting moved over, but, you know, was that also then going to be a situation where we're kind of everybody playing? Yoshida, and they have a whole, you know, O'Neill. How is that outfield kind of shaken out with playing time there? Because again, Duran had 3 stolen bases yesterday. My goodness, you know, definitely a good fantasy friendly profile. But again, if you're in a daily league, you know, where are you playing all these people?
So the good thing about Duran is that at least over here on the site, we never predicted him to lose playing time. He started all 5 games. He's the only outfielder to start all 5 games for the Red Sox. So Duran is as safe as it gets, and he's let off all 5.
Don't now, use rational thought and data with me, Mike. I'm talking about rumors, okay?
Jeez. But O'Neill has sat a game. Rafaela has sat a game. And I think Duran is probably going to sit a game very soon because I don't think he's going to play 162. And that's where Abreu's been getting his playing time. He kind of chips in, and he's a part-timer. Rafaela's defense, his glove is just too elite to take out of center field. I know there was talk about Rafaela playing second base, and I think that'll happen. But I think it'll happen against lefties. And that's it. But Pablo Reyes is able to play second base. So I don't know how often we'll see Rafaela play second base because Valdez has started all five games against righties. So Abreu has become the fourth outfielder type. And that was kind of I always projected him as a part-timer, but I also thought Emmanuel Valdez, it's kind of like his bat would make or break if he starts for the team, and he's been hitting well. So it's definitely a reason why Valdez is staying up right now, or at least playing, but we'll see how long that lasts. Obviously.
I mean, look, next week is next week, right? Yeah. But for right now, this is where things stack up.
Yeah. Abreu is the odd man out right now for playing time across the questionable names.
So speaking of next week is next week and all that fun stuff, you know, if we go to the Astros, one of the biggest questions was the rotation. A lot of people were kind of, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, select Ronald Blanco. A lot of people were selecting the, you know, fourth, fifth starter of the, let me just throw out a name, Pirates, for example, because they're like, you know, Ronald Blanco is only going to last for a couple of weeks. And what happened yesterday, he no hits the Blue Jays. What do you think is going to happen here? Do you think a JP France goes down instead than Blanco? Or do you think it's going to be Blanco going down when they start getting healthier?
So they both have options, which is a good thing for the Astros. But I do think I think by then it'll play itself out. I think they'll each get a couple more starts before Verlander returns. And then, but if I had to guess, I still think Blanco, I know he hit the Blue Jays, but it's still one start. I guess Blanco could turning around from going from no hitting the Blue Jays to giving up six runs in his next outing. You know what I mean? Like that's just he's that type of guy. It's what he did was a fantastic feat. I love to see it. Especially you have everyone, you have all these aces, you have Max Fried that can't get out of the first inning, albeit he should have. Bad call by the ump screwed him.
But oh my God, that was atrocious.
But Nola doing Nola things like, hey, he looks good. Oh, there goes a ball over the fence. Oh, he looks good again. Oh, there goes another like Nola, you know, so you have all that happening, right? But it was against the Braves. That's a little more forgiven. And then you have Ronel Blanco just, you know, casually throwing a no hitter against a decent Blue Jays team too. So I don't know. I know it's fun. It's great narrative. I just don't foresee Blanco being necessarily like, it'll play itself out, but I still think Blanco might be the odd man out right now. Because he was the odd man to even get in the first place. One start doesn't necessarily change that. Right. But or maybe they say, you know what, let's go six man. Let's ease Verlander in there, get everyone extra days off, or you know, skip a start here and there. Maybe keep one of those. Maybe they even keep Blanco or France as a multi-inning guy out of the bullpen just for spot start purposes and stuff too. So, but at the end of the day, yeah, those are definitely the guys. And I still think if I had to guess right now, if you're saying right now, I'm going to still say Blanco is the odd man out. No hitter is great and all, but I don't think he suddenly just supplanted France, who was part of their plans from the jump before the injury to Verlander.
You know, people talk about courage, and I am going to be really interested to see if a GM has enough courage. So let's say he throws a one-run game, two-run game next game out.
Then I might change my stance too.
But I'm just saying, like, I just want to know the courage that's required for a GM to sit somebody down, be like, yeah, I know, bud, you no hit somebody and you threw a, you know, one run game or whatever. But we still think you got to work on some stuff. So we're going to send you down. The six man though is a very interesting, you know, kind of way out to kind of, you know, elongate. Let's see what's going on. Give Verlander some extra rest, et cetera. But I'm just interested to kind of understand. I would pay money as a subscription service to see kind of that GM office when they try to talk them. Like, hey man, you got some stuff to work on. We're gonna have to send you along. You
know, when they do, the same thing when they do it to like prospects that are like Caminero, who are ready to break camp. Like, you know what, you're gonna go work on your defense that we don't care about.
Yeah, but let's be honest. There's got to be a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. They're like, hey, you're gonna send you down some defense because we really want another year of eligibility. I get that one, but the one where like, dude, you just no hit somebody. Yeah. A major league team. Yes, I know it's the Blue Jays, but still, that's really one for me. Okay, so another piece here, just real quick. What do you think is going to happen with the Angels? Do they ever get a major league entire team behind Trout? Because Trout right now is playing Mike Trout games. I mean, he's. I got to be honest, I was a little scared. You know, he was going third, fourth round in a lot of my drafts, even later sometimes, depending how deep it was. Are they going to have to start making a move here to actually, you know, put some team around him? Because am I missing the goodness that is the Angels?
No, they tried. And I'll give them that. They have tried them. You know, when they went out and signed Rendon, they went out and got Ohtani. They went out and signed pitchers. They just picked the wrong pieces to put around them, right? So I think the Angels are just going to angel this the rest of the way. And like they have Shanwell hitting second, but wait, no, they don't. They suddenly changed their mind and put Hicks back up there today. Now, I don't know if they're facing lefty or righty, but I think the lineup dropped. And I think Hicks is batting second with Shanahan. It's against the lefty, so that makes more sense.
You're still showing the Red Sox. You're still showing the Red Sox on your playing time website.
Well, I was looking at today's lineup.
I know you were. I know you were. I know you have like 35 tabs open, but I just want so that way people can see what's going on here.
This is why you're the host. You keep me in. I told you, I need someone just keep me focused. Here we go. So we have lineup. We have lineup. So anyway, but yeah, against righties, we saw that shift last year. I mean, it's been one start, so it doesn't matter if I show you lefties or righties. But Shanwell, right. Or maybe has it been two already? Oh, it was two. It was two starts. I guess is a righty against righties. There, it doesn't matter. It was two. Then it was two and two. Whatever. I remember Hicks was out. So 2-1. Hicks was out one game. So Shanwell started. Okay. So okay. And then they actually started a game together. And right. Shanwell out. But then so it looks like those two are batting second and sixth, and they alternate. So Hicks is gonna bat sixth against lefties. Shanwell will get the playing time against righties up at the top of the order. You know who's not playing ever at all? Rengifo. Rengifo started one game this year, and this is
Get me started. How upset I am about that.
But here's the thing. This is their first lefty. And they still sat Rengifo against a lefty that he crushes lefties. I thought he was going to be a weak side platoon guy. Meanwhile,
I thought he was, honestly, I thought he was going to get, you know, strong side in the sense of, you know, he has what, 142 position eligibility. And yeah. I was like, I was drafting. I'm thinking like, oh, cool. This is going to fill a plug. You know, I could do a plug and play on my daily lineup. This is such a mess.
He's at the point where you can drop him. The problem is one injury and he's probably the next guy up, right? That's kind of what you're banking on.
You mean one Rendon?
Yeah, one Rendon.
I mean, I think Rendon just is waiting for that, 10 games? And then he's like, all right, I'm going to shut it down.
I don't know if he has a hit yet. I got to look. He didn't have a hit entering yesterday.
I mean, there's a lot of guys there that Mickey Moniak, Sano, you know, Hicks are, you know, guys that I'm just like, okay, they're jogging on the bases a little too hard and they're going to probably call it a season, but... Yeah, Rengifo says, oh my God, what are you doing? Front office, not Rengifo. Rengifo's been great. But yeah, that one hurts deep down. Okay, well, that covers all the ones that I have gotten questions about and shot to me at Twitter. Are there any kind of big topics or notes that you have, Mike, or do you want people to just come to the site and check you out on Twitter?
Yeah, that's going to cover it for this episode. We're going to do this. We're going to aim to do this once a week where we kind of break down a whole bunch of like the big changes, playing time trends, lineup trends, and performance trends as we kind of did today. But obviously once a week, giving updates on different things, injury fallout, all that good stuff. So you and I have a running doc. We will continue to doc.
Yeah, and people watching, if you have questions, DM us, or if you're scared, we won't hear you.
I don't answer my DMs. I'm not gonna lie. I stopped answering my DMs.
I answer my DMs because I answered Mike's DMs. But if you want to, you know, reply to us on Twitter, yes,
within reason. Because some people the problem is here's the thing. I answer one, I get DMs like 3 or 4 years later from the same person without even a hello anymore. So it's like I stopped that. A select few people ruin DMs for everybody because I don't mind helping people out here and there. It's when people are in my DMs streaming like their pocket person, like, hey, I'm going to ask this guy because I have him as DMs.
Stop ruining DMs for everybody. You hear me, people?
Mine are open, but I think actually I might have closed them. I don't remember. Yeah, people ruined it. It's just a few people ruined it for everyone else. That's all it is.
All right. Well, anyways, come to MLB Playing Time, MLBPlayingTime.com. As you can tell, Mike's constantly working on it. It has changed so much in just a month, Mike. I mean, from spring training to now, it's incredible the amount of changes you've made there. I'm really impressed with it. I use the tool constantly. And again, we look forward to, you know, seeing you guys all again here next week. But definitely go check out Mike's site. Check it out on Twitter. Check me out on Twitter on Dapscout. And thank you so much for watching.
All right. Have a good one.